am I saying welcome back for? How about welcome to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland in New Zealand, the island change procrastination in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister John Key is good for the economy because now everybody will be able to get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Evelyn Gilbert, who is an oldie but a goodie, who we have not had on the show for quite some time because she's been busy doing other things. Evelyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It has been a long time.
Yeah, it's been over a year, I think.
It's that long? Wow.
Yeah, no,
too long.
Yeah, too long, man. Okay, well, you wanted to talk about gold and oil, didn't you? I like gold and I like oil. So what's up?
Well, let me start this by saying that I'm not sitting on a pile of gold. So it's not like, oh, well, I'm giving you advice to do this or that. But anybody who's been reading the news lately must have seen that at some stage the gold price went from just $2,000 to $1,400 in one crazy drop of 2 days. And that is a very interesting event. Gold didn't go down that much in 30 years. So that got me reading about gold a little bit more than I usually do. And that's a very interesting situation, a very dangerous situation as well.
What, dangerous how?
Well, I don't know if you know, but there is two markets of gold. There is the paper market of gold, and then there is the real market of gold. And usually they're sort of merged. Usually they're not that separate for most people. Most people say, oh, I'm going to buy gold. And they will buy a piece of paper that says you now own 3 ounces of gold or 30 ounces or 300,000 ounces of gold, and that gold is somewhere, they think, in a vault. And that gold, if they want that gold, they can collect that gold. But what has been happening is that people said, oh, we would like our gold now, and that didn't materialize. The ABN Bank in Amsterdam, in Holland, for example, said, we can't give you your gold, but we will give you the price of gold in money, in paper money. And so people said, hang on a minute, if I can't get my gold, then why am I holding these pieces of paper saying I own gold? And that started a sort of an avalanche of people selling that paper gold and get as much money out of it, and hence the price dropping worst in 30 years. But what's even more interesting is that it turns out that there were one or two big sources of paper gold who actually really actively manipulated the paper gold market. So that what happened was that separated the two markets. It separated the market in paper gold and the market in real gold. And what we've been seeing over the last month is that people in China, people in India, people in Italy are now buying real gold and want to have possession of the gold as much as they can. And because the price of gold is so low, they actually do get that gold from sources such as reserve banks. And so that's an incredibly interesting shift in where the gold is going at the moment.
It appears to me that it's the exact same thing as what happened during the beginnings of gold banking and paper receipts, which was the birth of the first kind of monetary system, really, where people had gold receipts instead of carrying around big bags of gold. And the gold traders had these vaults, and everybody thought their gold was in it. And he realized that, hey, most people don't actually come and get all their gold at once, so I can just say that people have such and such amount of gold on these pieces of paper and get them to pay me money to keep nothing safe for them, and then if they all come back and start wanting their gold, I'll just run off like a one-armed bandit. And that's precisely what's happening now, isn't it?
Well, it is happening exactly the same, except much, much worse. Because what happened at that time, people said, oh, well, if you're going to do it like that, give us some interest on the money we don't have in the bank, apparently, and we'll be sweet. So they sort of started partaking in the fraud that was of the fiat currency banking. So that was the birth of fractional banking. You know, they only had to have $10 against every $100 that they lend out. Because apparently only approximately 10% of all people wanted to get their money out of the bank at any given time. But what is happening now is that the amount of gold that's been sold is so many more times the gold, that the real physical gold that is actually in the world, that the real gold is only a fraction of,
I saw some kind of an illustration once, and it was a block of gold. I think it was like 5 meters by 5 meters, or something of that nature, in the middle of a football stadium, and it said, "This is the amount of gold on Earth. Like, it's fracking rare, very very little, you know, 5 cubic meters of gold in the whole planet." And I guarantee you, these people have sold hundreds of cubic meters of gold easily in paper currency.
Football fields worth of gold. But not only that, they haven't just sold gold as in paper pieces that say you now own gold. Based on those sales, they also sold derivatives on top of that to the value of maybe 1.5 quadrillion worth of dollars, which is, somebody told me once that it's like 22 times the entire global GDP. So, I mean, that is just non-existent. There is no money. There is nothing. It's just the illusion, and they keep selling the illusion.
We live in that currency now, don't we? Would you, how many illusions for that loaf of bread there? Well, it's 4.2 illusions. Okay, well, let's just get that. All right, cool. How many illusions for that piece of fruit there? Oh, that's 5 illusions. Okay. Yeah, and that's basically all we're operating on. Completely made up. My favorite phrase, making stuff up.
It's wonderful to just make stuff up. It's just that if you and I did it, we'd go to jail. But if this very small group of bankers does it, they end up in palaces that would absolutely outshine the Versailles chateau and all the crazy, crazy castles that all the kings in feudal times built. You know, I mean, like,
If I sold you a car, and then you came to collect the car, and it wasn't there, and in fact, 100 other people were also sold that exact same car, you'd go to jail for fraud. It's just that simple.
Which is what's happening, especially in London, rehypothecation of the same assets, which leads me to another subject, oil, because just a couple of days ago, they raided some banks and they raided some institutions and blah, blah, blah in Europe because they were making up the price of oil as they went along. It's completely rigged. There is no market mechanism, which is something, you know, a guy like Max Geiser of the Max Geiser Show just keeps pointing out, is that they are just making it up as they go along. And because we don't have any groups that check, and no checks, no balances, no transparency, we are paying maybe triple as much as we need to for oil, because they're saying, oh, well, how much will we sell it for today? How much can we extract from the population today? How much do they need that fuel today?
They just make it up. And even Lindsay Williams has talked about this, how they simply set the price of oil every day in London. So what's the price of oil going to be today? Well, we'll just press that button, and that's the price of oil. It has nothing to do with how much people are buying or wanting or supply or demand or anything like that. It is only to do with one thing, scumbaggery and making it up.
Yeah, and as we saw last year, this is what gets me, is that this is now the third time that it shows that an important market is completely rigged in favor of an extremely small group of people. But it started off, of course, with how LIBOR was exposed, the London Interbank Exchange interest rate. There's 16 banks globally who call in to an agent every day around about 11 o'clock London morning, after their cup of coffee, and they say, if we lend money to other banks, we would charge this much in interest. But it was completely rigged as well. And what nobody understood was that it couldn't have been rigged unless all these 16 banks were involved. And it just sort of disappeared into the blue yonder. And now this whole gold thing, which, by the way, blogs such as Zero Hedge and Max Geiser pointed out 3-4 years ago, also turns out to be completely rigged, as well as the oil market. And I'm sure we will find out that, the wheat futures, the whole food, important foodstuffs such as corn and wheat, is also completely rigged in the near future.
Unbelievable. Oh, wait, no, actually, strike that. It's obvious, isn't it?
Completely.
I don't know what it is about knowing the truth that just makes you frickin' cynical about everything, and you become correct about most things at the same time as becoming cynical.
And then you meet people who just don't want to know, or you meet people who can't conceive of this complete insanity.
Mm.
The next market which I anticipate, let's go on with the more pessimistic news here. The next market which I anticipate will collapse in the near future, and the gold market manipulation may have been an indication of that to come, is the bond market. The bonds that our government sells on our behalf, running up a debt that we have to pay back, which has happened in Greece, Cyprus, will happen in Slovenia. Italy is collapsing because everybody's buying gold and saying, stuff the euro. Same as in Spain. So that's a really interesting thing to look forward to and see how that will evolve.
Well, I can't see a good end to this. I really can't. This is going to collapse big time. These people have been stacking this house of cards, and they've created a house of cards so massive that nobody could even conceive of it. Like a Ponzi scheme. Apparently, the original name came from some dude named Ponzi, I think, way back in the day, like in the 20s, and he managed to embezzle a couple of million dollars or something like that. Today, we have Ponzi schemes that embezzle billions of dollars. They make the original Ponzi schemes look like somebody sneezed on a handkerchief by comparison. And that...
Make that trillions of dollars. Make that trillions and trillions of dollars.
Heck, while we're at it, let's make it quadrillions of dollars. Let's make it thousands upon thousands of trillions. Okay? And I'm not exaggerating. There are multiple quadrillions of dollars of derivative frickin' debt that motherfuckers made up out there. And it could destroy the entire planet's economy. I mean...
This is where most people don't understand. The destruction will come from other things. The destruction will come from, the people are beginning to find out, let's start another war. I mean, I read the other day that the United States is now involved in 78 global conflicts.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, 78. And this is, you know, we're having like several hot wars, and then you're having these like smoldering little ones, a total of 78 that we've been able to add up. So 78 global conflicts. So, you know, because...
How many, can I ask, how many of those 78 conflicts did the US start?
Well, I suggest all of them, to be honest.
We started 78 wars in 1 year. Could you try to break a record or something?
I think they've set that one already. And they're just breaking their own records time and again. But anyway, so that's where most of the actual destruction comes from, because you have to understand that that it's only 1% who holds on to most of those derivatives. And, for example, you know, to go back to New Zealand, how many, I think the government borrowed something to the extent of over $300 million a week, right, over the last 5-6 years since National came in power. And we now have, well, that was 2 years ago, $112 billion worth of derivatives on our books. And those derivatives are... purely for managing exchange mechanisms, they say. But I say...
Okay. When they say that, it doesn't mean anything to me. Therefore, it's probably just a smokescreen to conceal some form of scumbaggery.
Absolutely. This is done to keep the big banks going. Because, of course, John Key, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, you know, most of his wealth is in the Bank of America. Bank of America is now notorious for supporting drug lords, laundering money. It's one of the most corrupt banks in the entire global system. And, you know,
Who better to be the Prime Minister than somebody who has a major financial interest in crime?
Absolutely. And he was visiting Mexico the other day, but we'll talk about that on the other side.
Yeah, he's probably getting himself some good old Acapulco gold. We'll be right back after the break at thefinneyeastwoodshow.com.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream. Just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest talking about gold, oil, derivatives, and scumbaggery is Evelyn Gilbert. And we were talking over the break about how John Key visited Mexico and just like, you know, he went to go see the Mexican president and he was like, "Hey, man, am I running the economy okay?" He goes, "I think we crashed, man." Yeah.
Except, of course, it's about cocaine and heroin and not about a friendly joint.
Yeah.
Which is a sad thing. I wish it was about a sad
See, the friendly cartel grenade launcher attacks, you know, that kind of thing. That's what we're talking about. I also got the impression about John Key is that he must be a drug abuser. I was just thinking about this because if you're such a scumbag, okay, like if you're willing to lie to people bold-faced and you're willing to collapse economies, derivative the frack out of them, that kind of thing, I don't think he's gotten any aversion to hard drug use. You know what I'm saying?
My bet he's an alcohol man.
Apparently
maybe
he is.
Maybe a line of coke on the side. When he's, you know, when he's America, you know. Yeah, not here.
Well, maybe. And see, this is purely speculation, of course. But, you know, I'm just wondering. The government's trying to introduce legislation to drug test workers and things of that nature, but they're not introducing legislation to drug test the parliamentarians? I wonder why that is.
I wrote about it a year ago or so. I think it's an excellent idea. I think every public servant, which is what they are, should be tested. Just, you know, once a year, just out of the blue, yep, it's your turn, Mr. Key. Pee in the pot, please. I'd love that.
It would be nice. It would ensure some kind of transparency. And I don't know, the way he's running the economy, he must be on something.
I think he really believes that what he's doing, you know, that's a good thing. You know, because he makes money out of it, and that's a good thing. You know, he's a money junkie. He's a serious money addict.
See, a lot of people roll up $100 bills and then snort cocaine through it. He'll roll up some cocaine and then snort $100 bills through it. Is that what you're saying?
Just about, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Suck it up like a vacuum cleaner.
No, Gerald Salenta explains it, you know, explains excellent. You know, if we looked at them the same way, because they never have enough money. It is never enough. And the more money they have, and the more they're acclimatized to that amount of money, the more they need to get the same high.
That's true. It's again, money is like a drug. Isn't it like that? You know, the first time you take that drug, oh, mate, it's a big, strong experience. The second time you take it, you're like, it's not quite as good as I remember. Maybe I should do twice as much. Oh, there we go. There it goes back and forth. And the third time you do it, it takes three times as much and so on and so forth. So imagine you got a real buzz off of stealing, say, I don't know, $50 million off of the global economy and put it into a blind trust or something. And then you think to yourself, man, how can I get that high again? Well, I got to steal $100 million and then $300 million. I'm going to go for the big cheese. I'm going to steal $1 billion. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I take all that wealth from mum and dad investors and things like that. I'll sell them things that won't actually pay off, like assets or in the state or something like that. And then when the share prices go down, when we said that we wouldn't sell them, we'll sell them anyway. And then we'll buy out all that stuff from all those stupid mum and dad investors that we ripped off and tricked into it. And then make sure the entire country implodes. And then my big bank of scumbags will reward me handsomely with like a nice little post somewhere as a high commissioner, so I can keep collecting money and using my diplomatic immunity to smuggle drugs in and out of Jamaica.
That would probably would be what he would do, yeah.
Okay, now that is exactly what John Key is doing, okay? I don't have the evidence to prove it yet.
Well, you know, I say wait 5 years and it will present itself. I mean, you can see that he's already bored. He's getting that jaded, bored look of a junkie who's been promised by his dealer that he could get that really nice post later with more money. But he has to do his duty here in preparing this country for the big looting. You know, the oil companies, the energy companies, it all has to go. You know, they've got Fonterra now on the share market, and not just farmers, but, you know, hedge funds and stuff involved. So they're now dumping people left. So it's all going to plan, except not quick enough. So he gets called over to the United States, to Hollywood, where he gets the important treatment, and where he gets his little carrot dangling. Yeah, it's going good. But you have to. So here's a junkie that's in full withdrawal and knows that the dope is just around the corner, but he has to kill the dealer from the other corner first. And he's sort of dreading it because, it turns out that that dealer is a bit stronger than he anticipated. So he knows he's got to do some real work, and he hates doing real work. That's how I see John Key at the moment.
A dealer who hates doing real work. What is real work, Evelyn? As far as I'm concerned, real work is when you got something to show for it, right? Something that didn't exist before that does exist now. Massive quantities of imaginary debt doesn't count.
No. Well, it counts for him now. It counts for them now. But it's just, that's what most people don't get. Derivatives are fictitious. They have no value. They don't do anything for the economy. Yet they, at the moment, represent just about all of our global GDP. If that collapses, nothing changes with people like you and me. Not really, because we're slogging away anyway. You know, if I want carrots, I go to my vegetable garden and I dig them up. And for a lot of people, it is like that. It is that just that small group of people that could buy real-world stuff with an illusionary, fictitious currency can no longer do that. I think we'd all be better off if it collapsed right here, right now. They couldn't pay for armies anymore. They couldn't pay for arms research anymore. They would live in big houses with big cars and had no way of maintaining themselves, their staff, all the people relying on them. And people would have to go and say, yeah, where were my seeds to grow food with again? Oh, oops. Monsanto owns all of those. You know, it's if that collapses, then a whole lot of other illusions collapse as well.
Right, that reminds me. This weekend, Evelyn, there's a march against Monsanto in Auckland.
When?
At 3 p.m., starting at Aotea Square, and marching down. I'm going to be
where?
There. Just down to the bottom of Britomart, I would presume. I think it said on the Fashbook event that it would be sort of like, where do we go from here? Like, we assemble in Aotea Square and then decide where to go. I wonder where, if Monsanto has any biotech or any other type of contractors or offices in downtown Auckland. I'd be very interested to find out.
Oh, I've got some interesting news for you then. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you know, but I have in my house regularly people, young people from all over the planet who woof, that's willing workers on organic farms. And because I have a life outside of my blog. And one of these young people just a week ago told me she'd been working as recent as 3 weeks ago on corn fields. And these cornfields, so she was told, and she specifically said that I cannot prove anything, but she was told that those seeds were sent back to the United States to Monsanto. Now, this is on the south, in the wine region, the south side of the North Island, the wine region, and also where they grow corn. So this would be an interesting thing to research for either you or people who do this. Because if that is true, then we are here growing GMO corn for testing purposes.
Oh, that's been happening for quite a while. My friend Jonathan Eisen from the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine and Uncensored magazine has written a book called The GE Sellout, I believe. And we've been growing GMO corn here for quite some time. Without the public's knowledge, you know, you see all those greenies rolling around with GE Free New Zealand bumper stickers as if that's going to stop it. You know, like Monsanto comes in, oh my god, they've got bumper stickers! Come on, come on, we're going to get out of here! They got bumper stickers. We're so fracked, man. I drive around every now and again. Out to my mate's place, and I drive past these cornfields every single time I go out there, and they've got these big signs on the side of it that have these numbers and all of this other kind of stuff, And first time I saw one of those things, I asked my girlfriend Sarah, you know, she knows about gardening and she's got qualifications and stuff in it. And I asked her, what is that? And they go, oh, it's just the type of corn that they're growing. And then I asked her about it not too long ago again. And she says, oh, well, very. I found out that those are GMO crops that they're growing up in Auckland here. So, you know, it's all over the place. And this is what the globalists do, basically. If a whole bunch of people don't like it and get bumper stickers against it, they just go, okay, well, we won't publicly announce that we're growing it everywhere. We'll just grow it everywhere. And then those people can have their bumper stickers if they want, and they won't do jack.
Yeah, it only helps if you burn those fields. And if you burn them consistently, then they go away.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, oh, to your listeners, I'm not saying go burn fields now, okay?
It's yeah.
But, you know, they did in Hungary, that worked. You know, they did in Romania, that worked. You know?
Yeah. See, and back on the derivatives topic that we were going on there, I talked to Lord Fred Stewart on the show a while back from businessdoctors.co.nz, and he said what happens when you come into a company that is massively, massively in debt. Okay, or you've got lots of people that owe you money or vice versa, is to forgive the debt. That's the first thing that you do, is just say, all right, we're out of business, we're basically screwed, well, I'm going to forgive all the debts. And I think that's what is a very decent solution for the global derivatives oncoming crisis, is just say, all right, these derivatives don't frickin' exist. And right. The only reason why we reckon they exist is because we're pretending that they do. Well, why don't we just pretend that they don't exist and forgive all the debt? That would solve this entire problem instantly.
They didn't. Yeah, they did they did several times in old Babylonian times, you know, pre-Egypt times. They already had a banking system, believe it or not. And yep, they forgave. Oops, it's gone out of whack. Okay. Debts are forgiven. Jubilee. Great thing, Jubilees. Wouldn't it be great if you had a mortgage and one day it would be gone? And it's not like we have a mortgage. It's not like I don't want to pay it back. If you borrow money from someone, it's legit money that was created by labor, I would like to pay it back, because, you know, that's the product. That money is like an energy form. So if somebody earns an excess of energy and it is translated into what we call money, and he or she is prepared to lend that to someone else to help that other person, then you have a legitimate situation in which you want to pay it back. But if we are paying stuff with a fraudulent thing that is non-existent, that is not being created by somebody else's energy, then it will collapse, whether we like it or not. We might as well do it in an orderly fashion.
It makes a lot of sense. And because it makes sense, of course, it won't be uptaken by the politicians, because they're only interested in making dollars.
Exactly. And they're completely beholden to the financial banking system. But the banking system is what is the parasites. That is a parasitical system that doesn't function, it doesn't do anything, it doesn't add anything to social lives, to communities, to people, to the globe. And it's a parasitical system that needs to disappear.
Even on a TVNZ show, 7 Sharp, they even did a story about how the banks create your mortgage debt out of nothing. Second your signature goes on that paper, doesn't matter if the bank's completely broke, they instantly type in the numbers and you've got your hundreds of thousands of dollars for your home, which they can call in the debt at any time they please. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The show that's all about ruling countries with the Trilateral Commission and Bilderberg Group, and making sure that all the people who come to be elected into your official capacity of your government are working for us, the global mafia who control the banking system. And my very special guest is Evelyn Gilbin. She's about to lay down. some information about some foreign Kiwis that are currently controlling our government. Welcome back.
Evelyn, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. About those powerful positions. The other day, you know, when the whole scandal erupted about the GCSB nomination of John Key's buddy, the name escapes me. And I realized I Googled the guy, and it turns out that he's been making most of his career has been in as a government servant in the UK. And then I sort of thought, hang on a minute, so that's another guy who made his career outside of New Zealand. And then I started to go over which powerful positions in New Zealand are now held by what I would call foreign Kiwis, i.e. Kiwis who were born here, grew up here, and then for some reason moved abroad and made their mark out there. And then I thought, okay, well, John Key clearly is one of the best examples. He went out there, started to work for the Bankers Trust Bank, which is a very sinister, nasty bank. It's gone now, but at the time it was an almost 100-year-old bank.
Anything that mentions the word banker and trust in the same sentence cannot be forgotten. Oh, my God.
Exactly. Cannot be trusted.
This sounds so evil.
Exactly. What's more, John Key came back with most of his wealth. He doesn't have his wealth in the real world. He has his wealth either in shares or in financial products in the bank. He used to have, I'm guessing, you know, maybe 50% of all his wealth in shares in Merrill Lynch. And when Merrill Lynch was sold because it was bankrupt because of the derivatives that, amongst others, John Key had been selling, when they were sold to Bank of America, his share was changed into shares of Bank of America. Now, Bank of America is one of the most corrupt entities in the whole globe. And if you've got like 25 million worth of shares in that bank, it's like being in the mafia. You do what they want, because if you don't, you lose all that money. So that's really a big conflict of interest. Now, John Key came back, and, you know, there is tens of thousands of foreigners or Kiwis that come back after a career abroad. But within a year, he was elected for St. Helens, a newly created electorate. And within no time, he ended up as the Prime Minister of New Zealand. Whereas Helen Clark all of a sudden disappeared abroad and now has an extremely cushy job with the United Nations. So,
and then I believe she's now the she left New Zealand to become the third in command of the United Nations with a $9 billion budget and a $9 million salary. And now apparently she's been upgraded to the second most powerful. And my friend Jonathan Eisen has a gentleman's bet that she's in the running to be the next Secretary General.
And you know where she ended up a couple of weeks ago? As one of only three non-royal guests, the wedding or the crowning of the new Dutch king. The Dutch king, who is the son of Queen Beatrix, who was the daughter of the guy who started the Bilderberg Group.
She also regularly attended the Bilderberg Group and controls Dutch Royal Shell. And she just had to abdicate and resign recently. Yeah.
She is, and my guess is that she resigned because she had to separate her role as the Bilderberg grandmama from her role as the Dutch queen, because Holland is economically collapsing as well, and people are waking up to the Bilderberg group there as well. But her son, who's been working, you know, his hobby was water, which is being privatized, which is being financialized, which is being sold as derivatives in the Chicago Mercantile. Anyway, so she shows up there, and the two presidents of the European Union, Rompuy and Barroso, and the former leader of the United Nations. What's the black guy's name? Name escapes me at the moment. Anyway,
Kofi Annan.
Kofi Annan. So all of a sudden, and the week after he was crowned, who shows up for an audience with the king but the IMF leader, Christine Lagarde, the International Mafia Federation. So anyway, that's a sidetrack to all the Byzantine workings of the international political elite. So John Key comes back with a massive conflict of interest and becomes the Prime Minister of New Zealand. But that's not the only one. Second is David Shearer. David Shearer, United Nations guy, promoted as one of the heroes of Somalia, where he single-handedly beat Somalian pirates and what have you, we've been told. What not a lot of people know, that he was working at some stage on a couple of projects for the International Institute for Strategic Studies, and that his piece on outsourcing war, literally called outsourcing war, was instrumental in promoting mercenaries in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Kazakhstan, in Somalia, in Yemen. Even Monsanto now hires Blackwater mercenaries. And
that's not true. They don't hire Blackwater mercenaries. They bought Blackwater and renamed it Z because Blackwater had a really bad name for sending out psychotic mercenaries tripping balls on acid in Iraq, shooting innocent people.
Well, that's true, but what has just come out is that they're using Blackwater mercenaries now as undercover agents in eco, active groups and what have you, some people who want to fight Monsanto. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Blackwater is no more. It has been bought by Monsanto, so they can use them wherever they want. And they will. Anyway, so David Shearer was one of those people who had big publications in which he promoted the use of mercenaries in situations where it was politically difficult to use regular army. Read in subversive destabilization actions of, say, the magnitude of Libya or Syria. Or so this guy actually promoted war criminals and war crimes, and he is now the leader of Labour.
And just like John Key, he came in out of nowhere, no history with the party whatsoever, gets an electorate seat, then becomes the leader of the party, just like that.
Just like that, another foreign Kiwi. Okay, on to the third one. He's not even a Kiwi. Russell Norman is an Australian. Still, he's leading the Greens, and he's leading them in a very strange way, saying, oh, well, actually, yeah, mining isn't all bad, and it needs to be done, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, in all these three situations, real Kiwi representatives, whether you like them or not, I mean, Bill English, I think he's a hideous, venal, never mind that little git, but he was a real Kiwi. And you know, he's... you know, and the same goes for Cunliffe. And, you know, Jeanette Fitzsimmons. So I don't even remember the name of the female co-Green leader, chairman.
Matilia Ture.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, all of a sudden these three guys have really prominent roles and they really are extremely powerful. I mean, the three big political parties. Another foreign Kiwi. So then we go to the guy that was elected, that was promoted in what I can only call a corrupt, nepotistic fashion by John Key as the head of the GCSB, if I have that correctly, which was instrumental in breaking serious laws when they raided Kim.com's house, has been involved in spying on 80 New Zealanders illegally, which they now want to
make legal.
Exactly. And who made his who made his mark in England as a civil servant in the United Kingdom hierarchical structure. He's never worked for New Zealand. He's has no record of wanting to protect the interest of the New Zealand people. He's been chosen by John Key. While there were excellent New Zealand candidates for the post who didn't even get an interview. And so that's another foreign Kiwi put in place. And then, you know, very strangely, out of, you know, the Reserve Bank, Bullard, who was a staunch Kiwi governor, who believed in the fact that the Reserve Bank was a New Zealand institution and who, for all intents and purposes, really protected that situation. And they had an excellent specialist on stability, a real Kiwi, who could take over the post. And out of the blue, all of a sudden, Graham Wheeler, a Washington guy, the second in command in the World Bank, a close colleague of Christine Lagarde, who, by the way, is under investigation for massive fraud in France, who had her apartment raided.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I'd like to encourage people to go to your website, aotearoa.wordpress.com. Evelyn, thank you very much. We'll see you again sometime.